Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting you live out of Lexington, Kentucky for episode number 247 for those of you keeping score. And tonight is our New Year's Eve special. Yes, you heard that right. Two Eves, New Year's Eve special. So as of tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and we are on the threshold of crossing into 2021. Yes, finally, this crazy year draws to an end, and certainly tonight we'll be covering some New Year's items, and I'll be joined here shortly by co-hosts and guests alike. Right now, it looks like I am solo for the moment, so looking for some call-ins here shortly. So, but definitely join in the chat room if you do get a chance. Chat room is open and working just fine tonight, so come on in there and leave your questions and comments, and we'd love to banter with our listeners in the chat room. So we are having, of course, the New Year's theme here, and 2020 has definitely been quite a year for creatives. We definitely had a lot of surprises with this whole COVID mess, and certainly locked down everyone during the year, shut down a lot of live events, even gave us a lot of adventures. We had to take our Imaginarium convention from a live event and just within a few months convert it into an online virtual event. That was a lot of fun. So we definitely understand how it's been for everybody out there. And of course, it's definitely challenge, but definitely as indie creatives are, we are very resilient, and we keep fighting forward, and we keep getting things done no matter what. And an example of that, of course, is one of my co-hosts, Rose Marie Machario, who I think has just called in. I hope. I think that's you. Yay! All right. It's just you and me so far. We're going to have some adventures. Gotcha. International guests tonight. So we're trying to get some tests done right before the show. We didn't quite get connected yet, but I'm hoping that all gets sorted out by the time our guest is supposed to call in officially for the visit tonight, because it's a very awesome guest out of the UK. So hopefully that will get sorted out, and we'll get this whatever it cleared. But as you know, Rose, on live shows, there's always – always the chance of some adventure occurring. We've been through it all. That's for sure. But right. Good to hear you. How are you? How are you, first of all? What's the latest? Ooh. It's been, I guess, a few weeks since I've talked to you live on the show. I can't remember. God, it's just a blur right now. Sorry, this last week is with that compacting like a whole week's of work in a few days. I get brain dead, so I can't remember exactly the last episode that we talked. But yes, I know there's plenty of adventures that you've had since then.
Yes, it's just been there.
Oh, well, I'm glad you could join us tonight for sure, and hopefully we should be joined by Daniel here shortly, so he might be running just a hair behind on things. I think you might have something on in the background there, Rose, just so you know. I'm picking up something. But
kitten.
This is a year of resolutions. So, for some, I'm not, weirdly enough, I am very goal-oriented, and I tend to be, like I said, instigating all kinds of things all the time. But weirdly enough, I'm actually not the type that does a whole lot of, official New Year's resolutions. I guess the only one that I guess I could say is I hope that 2021 is not quite as strange as 2020. I guess that's the goal. And we'll see what happens. But It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. You know, you never know what's going to be happening, what's going to be, you know, unfolding as the year goes forward. But we certainly ended 2020 on a flurry of good stuff. I mean, we had 5 new releases over the course of the last month at our press, and so that certainly is a positive.
Awesome. Yeah. Yes.
So coming out of the COVID quagmire, as I call it, you know, where it was pretty much a disaster to try to put out anything during the middle of all the lockdown mania and stuff. But now it's looking a little, now, I wouldn't say like it's all, you know, no, pardon the pun, but all roses out there, but it's definitely a little better of a climate. And we did get 2 out on our 7th Star Shadow imprint. We got Tybee Island H-Bomb author Michael Houchin got his new one, Death of Innocence, out. We got Carol Pre-Flattish's The Coin Collector out. Launched a new children's book imprint, which, by the way, has gone really well. The book launch has gone really well. And that's for Dr. Vix, the girl who grew a sunflower taller than herself. And then we got Carl, of course, you know Carl well, Carl R. Moore with The Chains in the Sky. We'll be hearing from him pretty soon. And then last but not least, I managed to squeak out one of my ebook novellas for Darkness Enthroned right before Christmas hit. And then but I know you've got definitely a quite a massive work coming up, because I know Holly's been knee deep in the thick of editing your new novel, so I know that is definitely going to be one of the early 2021 releases, and there's several more on tap. Definitely look for some stuff from Lee Stone, John Pica, Kathy Jackson, for example, another one from Vic, Brittany Cummings on the children's book front. A lot of stuff coming up, a lot of stuff. So 2021 should kick off really nicely, and we're going to definitely hit the ground running. So that is awesome. And also, I want to ask you, I noticed that you have a new, maybe it's a new Twitter account, maybe not, but now I noticed that you have a Machario Productions moniker. I've seen that on the Twitter.
I changed the Dream Big one because I did Give My Love to Rose, and then Les and I had another project that we filmed before it got cold, way before any of the holidays. I think it was still hot out. And so that's in the waiting for the soundtrack to be added, but the majority of the editing has been done, and it's just a secret project. I mean, we're not going to say anything about it just yet, but it was shot in well over the 4K to where it could actually be put on Amazon Prime. It would be good enough to put on, you know, to submit to Netflix. I mean, it's just a short film, but and it was just me and Les, and he was my star. I wrote the script. I directed it.
Very cool.
My first directing. My co-director, she filmed it. She's editing it, and she's 17 years old. She's graduating this year.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yes, she's amazing. I've been in other works with her. And so, I mean, it was a really great project, and I'm excited about it, you know, to come out. She's working on the poster, and then I've got Gage and Ashley Sharp working on the soundtrack. They did the music for Give My Love to Rose. And so just kind of doing that thing, but I'm not going to announce it or share anything about it until I have poster and things like that to start, you know, teasing about it until we figure out where we're going to put it.
Very nice. Well, that's cool, and sounds like a cool collaboration. With the 17-year-old director, that is very cool. I'll always get like different perspectives, you know, sometimes when you work with somebody from a totally different generation. That's always I find that fun. I find that a lot of fun. And I know that reminds me, because Dr. Vic, he just did that with his first children's book. He had a 15-year-old illustrator that he collaborated with, and it and it worked just magically between the two of them. And so, yeah, some really good stuff could come out of those kinds of collaborations. And I definitely look forward to seeing what you got. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
Too cool.
So
too cool.
Slow going on the projects, but I'm hoping that I can get something else going on. Maybe you get motivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Holidays are really depressing for me. So
yeah. They're a little crazy. Yeah, I know that how it gets for a lot of folks, and it can be really heavy times for a lot of folks too. You know, with a lot of heavy memories and things like that. So yeah, it's not always a cheerful time at the holidays, but certainly tonight we're going to try to keep it on the upbeat as much as we can. And I will give you some cheer here, Rose. I had that almost four months of living hell building that PC and trying to get that desktop PC working. You know, my laptop is a good one. It's a very good one. And we really have had a monster challenge in getting that laptop or getting that desktop going. I mean, it's just one thing after another. Lots of, I don't want to get totally in the wonky technical issues, but it's been an odyssey. But let me tell you, we finally got it working. So finally, I can get my YouTube broadcasting station set up as exactly as I want it to. And so we're going to be moving forward on that in early 2021. Certainly expect to have you as a regular guest on that, because we're going to be doing a lot of channel content on my channel and on the SSP channel, and definitely want to highlight everything you got going on creatively, and that's going to be fun. I mean, we're gonna have a lot of fun with that. And we're not just going to have it on YouTube. We're going to have it on some other video platforms, because there are a lot of indie creators are migrating to other video platforms right now, because YouTube is, of course, everybody knows, has put an increased emphasis in their algorithms on large corporate type media content, you know, big media,
right.
Large studios, things like that. They're putting more of an emphasis on the big biz kind of content. So the independent creators that were kind of like the heart and soul of YouTube, a lot of them are kind of carving out turf on some exciting platforms, and we're looking into that and trying to make the determination on what ones to put on, but we will be featured on multiple platforms. Definitely.
I'm excited.
So, it's going to be cool. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and real quickly, Rose, I'm going to go ahead and give us our sponsors, and then we're going to turn on, because I think our guest is on deck. So I'm going to get our guest in here. I think he's actually connected. This is exciting. So give me just a second, and I'm gonna go ahead, and we got two sponsors tonight. We have Sandy Lender, the great Sandy Lender, and also we have, of course, Jump Master Press, two of our most wonderful supporters of the show, and both of them have some very snazzy spots. And let me go ahead and play both of those for you, and then we will get back to the show and to our guests. So here we go, first with Gene Rowley and Kyle Hanna of Jump Master Press.
Attention authors! Stop sending ebook readers away empty-handed. With the JumpCard ID, sell your books directly without the need for an online retailer. The JumpCard instant download, exclusively from JumpMaster Press, could be your ticket to more sales, more readers, and international distribution. Find out more about the JumpCard ID today at www.jumpmasterpress.com.
And thank you very much, Jumpmaster Press, for all your support. Definitely, folks, all you authors especially, as we get back into doing more live events, check out Jumpmaster Press for the Jump Card and Jump Card ID. Great way to sell audiobooks and ebooks at physical events. Such a cool, cool method, and great, great, great products. So check them out. And now we're going to go over to Sandy Lender. Join her email list, definitely. She is just such a brilliant writer, great person, and definitely I've had the honor to serve for her as an editor, so I can say that very confidently. Yes, she is an absolutely outstanding writer. But here is her latest spot.
It's exciting to find new creatives, which is probably why you listen to the Star Chamber Show with its cool lineup each week. Now one of those creatives makes following her easy for you. Check out the Facebook page for fantasy author Sandy Lender and click on the pinned post to access her email form. She offers a free short story in exchange for your name and email, so you can receive the world's most infrequent newsletter. That means no spam. All you have to do is click on the top post at fantasy author Sandy Lender. She's made it easy for you. Now back to learning about this week's cool creative in the Star Chamber.
Thank you very much, Sandy. And it's great to, always great to have Sandy Lender featured on the show. Great, great person. So thank you. Happy New Year to both Jumpmaster Press, Sandy Lender, of course, all of our great sponsors, Rose. And we are going to go ahead and bring our guest in here in a second. But as I promised him, yes, he's coming all the way across the pond, as they say, from the UK. So I have to give him a little bit of a grand introduction. And yes, it's appropriate as we are about to cross the threshold into 2021, we had to bring you an outstanding guest. And our guest tonight not only is a writer, but also is an archaeologist. And he has had travels and been to sites such as the temples of Cambodia, the Andean cloud forest cities of Peru, burial sites of Tibetan Plateau, and the Maori strongholds of New Zealand. So, yes, a world-spanning traveler and archaeologist. And his current work that has just been released is his debut novel. It is called Colony, and definitely has a lot of cool elements. It has everything from cyber warfare to submarines to the Russians to prehistoric ice mummies, and just looks like an absolutely fantastic read. And I just learned that his first wave offered for sale and pre-orders has sold out. So we are bringing him into the show at a great time. I would like to introduce all of you to author and archaeologist Benjamin Cross. And your mic is on, Benjamin, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for that introduction. That was fantastic. I don't think I've ever had such a grand introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, hey.
Hello.
If you're brave enough to stay up as late as you are. Yes.
Yeah.
If you're brave enough to stay up as late as you are tonight to join our crazy group, I mean, we definitely have to put a little oomph in your introduction for sure. And definitely been looking forward to talking with you. And Rose, I know, is also looking forward to talking with you. And right on the news that you just gave me that your debut novel in pre-order sold out. So we're celebrating tonight a day early. You know, I know we got New Year's tomorrow night, but or for you, it's actually almost to tonight, we're going to go ahead and celebrate.
It is actually New Year's over here, Stephen. So it's New Year's Eve, about sort of 2:15 in the morning. So you guys are going to have to forgive me, incidentally, if I sound a little bit spaced out. I've tried to have a couple of hours kip just to sort of refresh myself before the show, but it's like being back in college, basically.
Wonderful. Well, I tell you what, I mean, you're among creatives, and I think all creatives are spaced out to some degree, so I think you'll go over just fine. I'm not too much worries there. But yes, let's go ahead and right on the top, because it's a red hot topic. You just had this pre-order sellout. Tell us about Colony. It just sounds like a fascinating read.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a long time in the making, put it that way. I sort of first came up with the concept about it may have even be as much as sort of 10 years ago, really, when it first started playing on my mind. And then it's gradually been a process of finding the time to sit and put words on page, as you guys will know very well. It's an action thriller. There are elements of horror in there as well, and mystery and suspense. It basically focuses on the lead protagonist, who's a guy called Callum Ross. He's a Scottish archaeology professor at the University of Aberdeen. And he's having a bit of a tough time with his son at the start of the novel. He's one of these guys, not too unlike myself, I have to say, at times, who's ends up putting work slightly ahead of family for various reasons. And he's trying to make reparation, basically, with his boy. And before he can do that, he's whisked away and sent off to the Arctic, an archipelago, a collection of islands off the north coast of Russia called Franz Josef Land, which is, it's been targeted basically by a Russian gas company. They've identified that there's gas buried in the seabed off the shore of a particular island, and before they're allowed to drill for it, they have to do an environmental survey there. So Callum gets involved with a team of experts from around the globe. And as part of his survey, he's out on the island one day and he comes across an ice mummy. And the interesting thing about this, not that ice mummies aren't interesting anyway, because they're exceptionally rare, but the interesting thing about this particular one is that it's clearly been savaged. So it's a mutilated corpse, and Callum's obviously immediately wondering, so, you know, how has this happened? He's working on that, and he finds himself stranded on the island for various reasons, along with other members of the team and certain members of the Russian Special Forces as well. And, yeah, they're not alone on that island, Stephen. There's something there, someone who's watching them and stalking them, and yeah, it's all hell's about to break loose.
Well, I noticed that, and it's anything where you can work in Spetsnaz and give us an opportunity to actually say the word Spetsnaz on the air. I mean, that's fantastic in itself. But definitely, I mean, it's a cross genre, a real cross genre blender, from what I can sense. And I'm definitely going to be reading and getting a copy of your book. Obviously, I didn't get a chance to just yet with this crazy December we've had, but I definitely will. Because it does look like a real blender, and also they always say write what you know, and there's definitely a sense that, you know, you are drawing off of your archaeology background for this and taking it into a geographic area that I find very interesting, because you're right. I mean, there's a huge geopolitical focus. I mean, may not be in the mainstream media too often, but if you really kind of keep a watch on events in the world, there's a real interest in the Arctic region and also Antarctica as well. And, you know,
absolutely,
by, you know, other countries, Russia, you know, United States, China. I mean, all kinds of countries have a huge, large nations have a huge focus on that territory and things that, you know, they're finding and digging up and explorations. And of course, the ice drilling. I'm fascinated by that when they do those core drillings and pull up all kinds of cool stuff from deep within.
Absolutely.
But you really drew off of your background. And I think that would be a good thing. That's kind of a little instructive for writers and what, you know, in what ways were you able to draw? You know, I'm assuming, you know, probably your characters, you know, not, you know, it's not autobiographical, obviously, but how did that help you kind of anchor the story and being able to draw off of your academic background?
Well, obviously, the lead character, Callum, is an academic archaeologist, so that was a very useful bit of experience, really, in order to give him a sort of a more rounded character and keep him, you know, take him out of the 2D category. I think with novels like this in particular, and with the action thriller genre, there can be a tendency for the characters to kind of play second fiddle, really, to the story. So I was very conscious of that throughout the writing of Colony. You know, I wanted to make sure that these were rounded characters, you know, they had believable backstories, and that they were people that readers could connect with, you know, that they would want to communicate with and understand. So I think that was useful in that sense. Obviously, the novel also, it deals with a number of archaeological themes, not least with the ice mummy, various other artifacts that Callum finds on the island as well. So I think in a general sense, the knowledge that I've gained over the years of the potential ways in which these finds can affect our understanding of the past, and also the ways in which people would go about researching certain finds and artifacts, has really helped to, you know, add an element of authenticity to the book. At least that's what I'm hoping anyway, Stephen. You know, I guess it's up to the readers to, you know, to tell me whether I've succeeded in that or not. But I'd say that was probably where it's become most valuable.
Well, I have a hunch that, yeah, you did bring that through in a big way as far as the realism aspect. I have a real hunch on that because just looking just kind of like the overview of where you've been around the world, I mean, it's pretty spectacular to most of us that are that are discovering you. And you know, and I found it interesting, too, you know, you didn't mention in Arctic travel in some of your key points, like when you mentioned Peru, Cambodia, you know, Tibet and New Zealand. So was that a conscious choice to choose a setting that maybe that was, you know, one of the ones that maybe you haven't been to personally, or have you been to that region personally?
No, I haven't. And you're absolutely right. It was very much a conscious decision. I guess it was, you know, it was a way of getting to explore a place which is so incredibly remote. You know, I think Franz Josef Land itself, I think they, you know, you maybe get sort of 15, 20 boats, generally research vessels, will go there in the course of a year, you know. It's only accessible for a brief period of time during the summer when they can actually get through the ice and make it there. So, you know, the actual reality of visiting these places is that, you know, it probably isn't going to happen for the likes of me. I think I've certainly explored that region. It's always fascinated me. I know you said that region has fascinated yourself as well, and the Antarctic, and it has me. So it's, Rising Colony allowed me to really research, you know, what it is about the Arctic that's become so attractive to the various nations that share that particular part of our planet, you know. And I think I'm right in saying that there's about a quarter of the world's untapped oil and gas locked up beneath what remains of the ice flows there, you know. So going back to what you were saying before about this huge geopolitical sort of dimension to that region, it really is a hotbed at the moment. And as the ice recedes, which of course it is doing due to climate change and other factors,
right,
it's becoming that much more accessible as well, you know. So half the reason that the characters in Colony are able to get to where they get to on Harmsworth Island, and the reason that they get into the sort of trouble that they do, is in a sense kind of related to the fact that, you know, we've got this climate change emergency on, and it's changing the planet not necessarily for the better.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it's a very relevant topic in that sense with climate change and a lot of focus on, you know, the melting, ice melting measurements and things like that. I mean, yeah, it's definitely like I said, your book touches on a lot of different things. That's why I say it's a real cross-genre blender, and it's also a thematic blender in many ways. And so I think in that sense, I think your book, from what I see, is it can appeal to a number of different readers. This one is not simple to put on a one spot on a shelf. I mean, looks like, you know, you've got thriller elements, mystery, horror, it's a bit of historical fiction woven in, and elements of that woven in. You got a lot of different a lot of different genres kind of weaving their way into this type of narrative, and so that's good. I mean, because you can actually connect with many different types of readers, I would think, and probably, it's early, but you did sell out, so I guess you're sensing that.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right as well. I think, you know, there are many different ways in which this book can be read. At least that's my hope. And, you know, I have had several people who've said to me, you know, they've said those magic words, which is, you know, this isn't normally the sort of thing I'd read, but I really enjoyed it, you know. So I think you guys will understand as well as anyone, you know, that's quite an accolade really for you as an author, isn't it? For somebody to say, look, I'm, you know, this isn't my genre, man, you know. But at the same time, I thought I connected with it, and I thought it was really great. So, yeah, it's I think it will hopefully have a wide appeal.
Oh, I'm hoping so, and definitely I'm a sucker for authors from the UK myself. I mean, because you have just such a just tremendous literary heritage. My two biggest influences were Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, and you know, so I definitely, and then Clive Barker became one of mine. So I mean, my list of influences are just rich with authors that you know are from the UK, and so yeah, you even got that going for you. So cheers!
I'm with you. I'm with you in the Tolkien club there, Stephen. I was at university doing my postgrad, it was in Oxford, and Tolkien obviously used to live in Oxford and teach there indeed, or lecture. And one of the pubs that he used to frequent was called the Eagle and Child, and that was one of the regular haunts for me and a couple of my mates as well. So, I've always been a big fan of Tolkien, and I was honoured to be able to sit in the corner of the pub where he used to sit by all accounts, and enjoy an ale. So
nice. So you probably absorb that essence, and that makes your writing even richer. So
I absorbed a lot of beer, Stephen. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know about essence, but I absorbed a lot of beer. Yeah.
And the beers over there are phenomenal. I mean, I have to say, I've only been to the UK once, but let me tell you, I mean, every single town I visited, I made sure to go to a pub and try out the local bitter or whatever they might have. And man, I tell you what, I mean, that is another strength of the UK is the beers. You got some good ones for sure.
We're very lucky in that respect. Yeah.
So, but hey, you know, when you come over to the States on your book tour, I'll introduce you to what we're famous for here in Kentucky, our bourbon. So we're the bourbon capital here in our state. So I can at least reciprocate with some quality adult libations.
I'd very much enjoy it. My wife and I did actually, we came to the States a few years back now, and we went to various places. We didn't make it to Kentucky. I think she may have gone there before, but certainly when we went together, we didn't make it that far south. We went to various places on the eastern seaboard and also over in California as well. And I actually enjoyed some quite nice beers, I have to say.
Very nice. Yeah, and we've got some intriguing. I know we're not as old of a country as you guys. We're more of the youngsters over here in America, but in terms of the age of our history. But I will say that we do have a lot of good archaeology with our indigenous population. There's a lot of fascinating sites with indigenous tribes here, and a lot of discoveries are happening all the time. And some of them are quite intriguing and even get on the edge of some of the conspiracy theory kind of stuff. Like they'll find sometimes these giant skeletons or pictographs of things that look almost like spaceships sometimes, and there's some fascinating stuff that pops up in the archaeology of in the indigenous tribes here. So you might even probe some of that for some of your future topic ideas,
absolutely.
Callum Ross is supposed to be a franchise character, or if this is a standalone novel, or are you launching a guy that's going to go on adventures of all kinds? That's something I did want to ask you early.
Yeah, well, there is. I've got plans to do a sequel to Colony. It's not something that I've started doing just yet. I've written a second novel. Which hopefully I'll come back and talk to you about when that's when it comes out.
Sure.
Probably in a year or so's time. But I've definitely got plans to bring Callum back to the page. I'd love to do that. I mean, I love writing his character, and I have to say some of the other characters in Colony as well. A couple of other members of the team that he works with. There's a lady called Daria Lebedev, who's a Russian ecologist. And she's a member of the team. Mm-hmm. And also there's a paleontologist from Canada called Ava Lee, who I really enjoyed writing. I mean, her character was very interesting for me to sort of play around with, because she kind of swings between being, paralyzed with fear about some of the things that are happening around her, and then finding herself so overly enthused about her discipline, about, you know, her own research, that she kind of forgets that she's scared, you know? So she was kind of a quite an interesting and complex character for me to work with. And another one's a guy called Dan Peterson as well, who's from Texas, Galveston, and he's a marine biologist. So within the book, he spends an awful lot of time in his submarine, which is a research sub, and he's basically taking samples and things of that nature. And yeah, he was another very interesting character to write. So yeah, it's there's a lot of encouragement really for me to bring Callum back to the page and yeah, do a sequel.
Excellent. Well, then I will have to definitely drop you some notes of some of these really interesting, intriguing finds that are over here, because definitely if you're getting into some genre blenders and have horror elements, I think you'd probably love exploring some of our indigenous archaeology over here. There'd definitely be some good ideas and certainly some good theme connections. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have to say, actually, Stephen, it's quite an interesting thing, because ethnographically, some of the indigenous communities that are still obviously alive and very much well in the US, you know, to look at the culture that they share and certain of the sort of elements of their history can be very informative when we're looking at other societies as well. I read a book.
Oh yeah,
quite
most definitely,
and it. Yeah, I read a really good book recently, which I'd very much recommend to you. It was by a guy called Keith Basso, and it's called Wisdom Sits in Places. And it was to do with, I think it may have been the Navajo, but I couldn't swear to it. But it was one of the indigenous tribes, and it basically looked at how memories were sort of embedded within elements of the landscape. So, you know. They weren't sort of written down or, you know, formalized within stories, as it were, but they were passed down orally with reference to landmarks such as particular mountains and rivers and things of that nature. And certainly there's a lot of interest in that sort of ideology over here when we're looking at certain societies and trying to understand why they created monuments in certain places, why they might have venerated certain parts of the landscape over others. So, yeah, there's a big crossover there.
Yes, and of course, in your backyard, though, you have all those awesome henges and all kinds of cool stuff, you know, dotting the countryside. So, yeah, there's some great stuff. Yeah. Definitely.
Do you know the most interesting thing that I've actually excavated recently was quite a recent ditch, and it's in my own back garden. We moved out to a tiny little sort of small hold in Wales, which is sort of in the southwest of UK. And
love Wales.
It's a fantastic place. It's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, we haven't looked back since we moved. But I was out in the back garden the other day, and me and my young boy, he's six now, we were sort of digging around, you know, maybe thinking about planting some potatoes or something. And we started turning up bits of pot. And it wasn't particularly old. It was maybe Victorian, maybe Georgian. So I'd been an archaeologist, you know, till the end, I decided I was going to dig a hole. And so I dug a great big trench in our back garden, much to the dismay of my wife, I have to say. It turned out to be an old drainage ditch there, which the successive families in the farmhouse had used as a refuse dump. So all of their old stuff was in there, you know, shoes, old leather shoes from the 1700s, pots, all sorts of bits and pieces were in there. And it was just a fascinating thing. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was, yeah, for us, as you've recognized, that's quite a recent thing. But yeah, God, it was wonderful to dig. I really, really enjoyed it. So, yeah. Yeah, we're lucky over here.
Yeah, nearby you found a huge stash of Viking coins that were left by a slain warrior that never got to go back to them, and now you can retire. That's the rest of the story, right?
That's a fine thing, yeah.
Nice, man. Oh, that, yeah, that's, and that is cool. People underestimate, yeah, just how much you can glean from the common items. That's the thing that I like when I'm looking at archaeology or history or artifacts. It's not necessarily, I joke about coins, and, you know, certainly it's neat to find the shiny stuff, as they say. But it's also, I think it's more interesting to see, you know, the general stuff, you know, the stuff that, you know,
yeah,
is day to day, that stuff that I think that helps give a more of an organic picture of the time and the people and, you know, kind of how they lived, as opposed to, you know, the stuff that only maybe a few people had, or the more, you know, the rarer items. So the common stuff tells a broader picture. And so like you said, you can glean so much out of a find like that. That is cool.
I mean, what you're saying there is absolutely spot on. I mean, it is, that's what archaeology really is about. You know, it's not really about gold and, you know, treasure and that sort of thing. It's more about layers of soil, you know, when you get into it, but the things that are contained within them, you know, they tell you things about a past life, you know, and past communities and how they saw the world and, you know, all sorts of things which are, you know, they bear directly on how we feel and think today and, you know, how we choose to feel and think as we move into the future, you know. We find evidence for people having used particular types of agriculture which have evidently led to, you know, the exhaustion of the soils and they've had to move on, you know. These are lessons that we can learn from the past and then not repeat those mistakes. So, yeah, you're absolutely
right.
Yeah,
one
would
think.
Yeah.
I read something really interesting not too long ago about how in a pub in Ireland they dug up and happened to be working on something, and they discovered some bodies. So they took them and found their DNA was from Eurasia. You know, so they were from what used to be Tuscany in Italy, and then they were thinking that maybe, you know, some of the Irish came from there, but I have family lineage that was dated back to where Coronado on one of his ships had some great, 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 great grandparents from Spain that went to Ireland. So that was kind of fascinating, just how everybody just kind of transplants around.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all taken by Vikings.
It absolutely is, Rosemary. And I mean, one of the things that never ceases to amaze me, really, is when you see quite how mobile people were, you know, in the very distant past. And you find people who have evidently travelled huge distances to be where they've finally been laid to rest and, you know, things of this nature. And there are always these sort of surprises. It always throws you curveballs whenever you stick your spade in the earth, you know. I'm trying to think of quite a good example of the sort of question-raising nature of archaeology is with the excavations at Pompeii. I was reading a little bit about one of the basements that had been excavated at some point, and there were obviously people had fled into there and sort of, you know, hidden and hoped to survive. And the bodies that they found were split into sort of two very distinct groups on either side of the room. And one of those groups had no possessions. And they appeared to all intents and purposes to be, to be impoverished, potentially slaves, something of that nature. And then the people in the other group on the other side of the room had, you know, gold coins and all sorts of other bits and pieces. And the researchers quite rightly raised the question that, well, this looks like it's a cut and dry situation. You know, we've got the poor people over there and the rich people over there. But then somebody else came in and basically said, well, hang on a minute. Why haven't we got looters over there and the people that they've robbed during all the confusion over there, you know? So it can raise an awful lot more questions than it answers, archaeology, and that's part of the fascination, you know, it really is.
Yeah, and I forget the technical term for it, but sometimes I know that in your field you come across artifacts that really kind of turn something on its head. And I know that, you know, there's some, you know, some people that, you know, come up with these very provocative theories involving, like, sea voyages from ancient China, even maybe the Egyptians got farther than we think, and lots of different theories and speculation crops up because when you are exploring an area, sometimes you'll come across an item or an artifact that technically, you know, by the current base of knowledge shouldn't be there, but it is. And yeah. And that is to me those got to be just like fun for somebody creative like you to come across, because yeah. that opens up the whole field of possibilities for writing for
well,
sure.
That's it. Yeah, that's absolutely it, Stephen. Your brain kicks into gear as soon as something like that crops up, doesn't it? You're thinking, wow, how can I explain this? You know, even if there's no factual basis for it, you know, let's make something
right.
up and
yeah.
tell a story, you know. So yeah.
yeah. Yeah, because even if it's a little flimsy, you know, like I said, the theory or whatever, I mean, certainly it's rich content for a speculative fiction tale. And, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, we can still play with it, even if it's not entirely academically sound. yeah, that's the good
yeah,
thing
yeah.
about being an author.
Yeah. Guilty.
But,
guilty as charged. Yeah.
But yeah, coming from your background though, you can infuse it with just enough you know, background from your background and everything to make it plausible. So yeah. that's where it really gets fun.
I'm really hoping that's how it comes across, Stephen. I really am.
yeah, that's awesome. So how so who is the publisher of the book, and how did your relationship with them come together? We'd love publisher stories here too.
Sure. So it's a small independent publisher over here called the Book Guild Publishing, and they released about 100 titles a year, somewhere in that order. So they're not one of the big five. I don't know. Most of your listeners will probably know already that. When we talk about indie authors, you know, it's those of us who are with independent publishers who, you know, aren't your Hachette Livres or, you know, your Penguins, your Random Houses, those, you know, the big five.
Right, right.
So these guys, they're absolutely fantastic. I mean, I sent them a submission, basically said, look, you know, here's my story. Here's the synopsis, the way that you do with these things. And they came back and said, yeah, we love it. It's going to need a little bit of work editorially, which is great. And yeah, they've been fantastic to work with so far. The guy who has designed the cover, I mean, the cover just blew me away. I mean, I'd had, you'll know this as well. Well, you guys, you have an idea, don't mm-hmm. you, of potentially what the cover's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And he nailed it, you know. He had a little bit of a few pointers from me, but I didn't go into particular detail. And yeah, he's really pulled it out of the bag and produced a spectacular cover, in my opinion. Mm. And yeah, editorially they've been great, and I've had nothing but support from them really. So yeah, it's a good relationship at the moment.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that the cover, in my opinion, I work around covers all the time and also, you know, design some myself. I mean, this is definitely a big five, you know, caliber cover. I mean, it definitely says Thriller from the second you look at it. And of course, you know, obviously we talked about how your book has blends a lot of things. But yeah, but it does bring across the main core immediately on glancing from it.
Yeah.
And the horror element is working nice with the way the Y was designed on Colony. I mean, that's
yeah,
where you get the little hint
like
that there's a horror
well.
Element. Yeah, that was a nice touch,
like,
and it brings that across. Yeah, that's
yeah,
not hard.
I,
that's not
I
easy
agree.
when selling a book that's, you know, that's core, you know, that's got a big thriller element. So you want to get that across, but you also want to get across that there's something else in there. And
yeah,
yeah, kudos to the designer. Great job on that. And,
yeah,
I
absolutely agree with you. And I think it's interesting as well that when you see it on the page, when you see it on a website or something up against in a lineup of other covers, you know, to me at least, it mm-hmm. seems to stand out. It seems to have, you know, there's something that kind of draws the eye. I don't know whether it's the simplicity or the, you know, the light coloration on it. But yeah, I'm very happy with it anyway, put it that way. So Yeah.
Yeah, you even got the words fading out and some of the lines, you know, kind of giving that kind of misty, cold kind of feel. And, I mean, that's, yeah, just nice,
yeah,
subtle touches to the cover that make it really pop. And, I mean, that's a,
yeah,
that's a nice job by the publisher. Really, really good job in coordinating with that. And I have to give them bonus points because I have two tuxedo cats in my family, and your publisher has a tuxedo cat
yeah,
in their logo. So
yeah,
I didn't fail to miss that.
Yeah.
I did not fail to miss that, and both of my cats approve and thought that was excellent. And 100 titles a year, that's a really solid independent press. I mean, because,
yeah,
you know, a lot of small presses usually can get out, you know, 3 to 5 titles a month, you know, ones that are, you know, pretty hopping along. And, yeah, to get out about 100, I mean, that's a pretty solid independent press. I mean, that's a, yeah, they're
yeah,
busy. I know they are, but
they're
not that many titles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're very good. They're well regarded, and they've worked hard with
yeah,
me. You know, I, from my own experience of them, I can see why they're able to do what they're able to do. So yeah, I'm very happy with the relationship and the arrangement that we've got at the moment. So yeah, fingers crossed we can make it work together.
Yes, yeah, because we definitely want to have you come back to speak of your exploits and adventures going forward and your own archaeological finds. Who knows what you'll find in your backyard next, because, yeah, Wales has got such a rich history. Wow. I mean, I that was one of my favorite parts. I told people, I was like, this is one of the best-kept secrets in the UK. Not many people mention Wales, but yet it's just got such a beautiful mountainous territory in it, and I mean, the castles are just spectacular. Of course, you know, we can definitely I know King Edward built a few to contain the Welsh with Caernarfon and some of those, and they're just gorgeous. And I even held up a tour bus to walk the base of that castle. I was like, I am not leaving here until I walk the base of the castle. So,
hey,
I sort of got everybody angry, a little bit miffed at me that day, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, we where we are in Carmarthenshire, it's obviously it's steeped in history. There was a big Norman presence and everything else, and it's the town itself. It was a port town, and before, I think around the sort of early 19th century, it was actually the largest town, you know, in Wales. Largely due to the fact that it had all the imports coming into the port there, and the river that it sits on, the Towy, the valley stretches on up and goes up past Llandilo. And if you drive along the main road through that valley, you just come to sort of castle after castle, you know. And there are a couple that me and my family go to quite regularly. We take the boys there to have a run around, and there's one called Drislin, which it stands on this colossal mound right in the middle of this wide valley next to a kind of a winding serpentine river. And it just looks like a kind of a Camelot, you know. It's a very much a dramatic, picture perfect sort of place. And as you say, you know, that's what Wales has, and in no short supply really either. So yeah, we're very lucky to live here, and I'm very, very glad that we moved out here when we did. You know, I'd much rather have been in lockdown out in an area like this than where I was previously, which was a lot more built up. So yeah, but haven't looked back.
Yeah, in the lockdown era, it pays to be in a more rural setting, I can tell you that.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
It's no fun to be in a city during a lockdown. So, you got out just in time.
It's one of the only good decisions I've ever made in my life, really, Steve.
Well,
worked out quite well, that, yeah.
Well, it looks like you chose a good publisher, and it looks like you, have made some other good decisions going forward. So there is positive momentum for you going into 2021. That's for sure. And Rose, you're gonna have to mark down the castle he just mentioned. Rose writes fantasy; it's kind of based back in the Viking Saxon era, and she definitely would want to, I think, visit that castle and area, yeah, for some inspiration for sure.
Yeah,
so Rose, mark that down.
Yes.
Hey Rose,
I need to be in all the places.
I'll let you know exactly where it is, and I could send you some pictures as well. It really is, you know, it's a picture perfect. It was made for the camera,
nice.
Really. So yeah, I'll send you some across.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
I followed your page today.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much indeed. I did see that you'd reposted one of the it was the advert for this show, wasn't it? And yeah, thank you very much for doing that. I'll give you the follow. I'll follow back.
Thank you.
So Rose, did you want to maybe talk with Benjamin about character, any craft type stuff when it comes to writing? Because I know that's some areas that you really love.
Yes, this is going to be a silly question, but I just had to, especially after hearing you're an archaeologist. So, did you ever have like the fleeting moment to have a Indiana Jones theme?
An Indiana Jones theme to the novel, Rose?
Yes, like in a way, did you ever have that kind of go in your head and out your head, even just for like a moment, to have like that kind of an adventure?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I mean, I can't say hand on heart that I didn't. I mean, I've got, you know, I grew up with on a diet of Indiana Jones and things of that nature. So it's in there. It's in my subconscious, whether I wanted it to or not. It has probably had an influence on the way that I've written certain characters and sequences. Hopefully it's, you know, I've given it maybe a little bit more depth in terms of the characterizations and things. But yeah, I mean, you could do a lot worse than an Indiana Jones character, couldn't you?
Right. Well, I don't know. I try to ignore that Shia LaBeouf was in it in one. So I try.
Yeah.
I don't acknowledge that he was in that one, that last one.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be good. Well, once Holly is on with Rose, we'll have to get the discussion going on that, because Holly's a big Shia LaBeouf fan, so that will be a fun debate. We'll get that going.
Yeah.
And
well,
Holly
they're going to make a final Indiana Jones movie, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think this is one of the controversial ones for the years coming, isn't it? Some people are saying, "Well, we don't want him to come in and do Indiana Jones when he's, you know, I don't know, how old is he now? He's 70, is he, or in his 70s? And then other people are saying, "No, how brilliant that he can bring that extra dimension to the role, you know." So
he's almost putting himself in what his father's role was, you know, when Sean Connery played his father.
Yeah,
in the one movie.
Yeah, one of my favorite characters in the whole franchise, Henry Jones, absolutely fantastic.
So, and there could be references of how he's acting like his father.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, what we need to do is get Benjamin a franchise going, a colony movie. Yeah, because I think looking over just even the synopsis of his book, I mean, yeah, this one could be turned into a movie. I mean, it's I just know that already, and I haven't even read the book yet. But wow, I mean, it's just got all those things that I think that movie audiences are drawn to as well. And so that'll be your next adventure. Yeah,
Netflix.
Yeah, something like that. Amazon Prime now they're spending big bucks. Yeah.
That's very kind of you, Stephen. There's a number of people that have said the same thing. It's, you know, so I had somebody say that it read kind of like it was a movie script almost, you know. There were these sort of big cinematic action sequences and think, you know, that sort of dimension to it. So, yeah, well, I mean, we can dream, can't we?
Sure.
Yeah,
we absolutely.
Dream. Yeah.
I was just saying that. Oh God, I hope I can recall the full story on it. But I know that. It's very popular. The Queen's Gambit, the movie about the chess had the chess theme in it, and it took them like 30 years to. 30 years of dealing with people that said nobody would be interested in a TV series about chess. And they persevered, and Yeah, the producer was talking about it recently, I think, on the BBC. But yeah, they persevered for like 30 years to get that made. But yeah, there's something to it. Yeah, when you believe in your story, don't give up there, Benjamin. you too can be on Netflix. definitely.
Yeah,
so.
You're absolutely right, and I think we know as authors, don't we, as well as anyone, that you have to have a very thick skin. You know, you have to.
Yeah.
You're going to get rejections. Not everybody's going to like what you write. That's the nature of the beast, and it's good. It keeps it varied. It keeps it alive. And let's see what the future holds.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I know that your book just now is, going to be coming out. So it's going to be, I'm sure you're going to be looking at the first waves of reviews. So that's always a fun experience when you especially when you're at your debut novel. I still remember my own experience with that. Rose just recently went through that not too long ago, but watching the first wave. First wave of reviews coming back. That's a neat experience too. I have a hunch that you're going to be happy with what you hear back. I have a good feel about it.
I'm kind of in the middle of it at the moment, actually, Stephen. I have had some very, very good responses back from independent reviewers. I've had
good deal.
Well, I mean, a lot of 5-star reviews. A lot of people have enjoyed it, and probably the best accolade recently has been from it's a very big readers website over here. It's called lovereading.com, and they've given it an Indie Books We Love Award, so that's been really fantastic to receive, and it will go up on their website with the logo and all the rest of it. So yeah, I've been absolutely blown away by the response and the reception, and yeah, even people that haven't particularly connected with it have had some brilliant insights into it. So it's not that, to me, is just as valuable. So it's been interesting, and as you say, I'm in the middle of it, so I've got people have got a lot more to throw at me yet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh yes. Well, it's like we always say, you know, you're not always going to, you know, there's no one book that connects with every audience, and it's the art of finding your audience. And that's the trick. And they're out there. And certainly when you have something that appeals to multiple genres, I mean, you've got quite a number of territories you can explore. And congratulations on the award, because that's great. You got to update the press release now to an award-winning novel. So there you go. You're a good start.
it's great. It really is. And do you know what some of the things that have happened recently, though, because it's a steep learning curve at the moment. You guys have been through it, of course, but for me, it's it's happening thick and fast. But I had an email through from a lady in Canada earlier today, and she basically, it was just a very short email, and she said, "Look, I've entered your giveaway on Goodreads. I'm really, really hoping that I win it. If I don't, you know, how can I get a copy of the book over here in Canada, and can I get a hard copy of it?" And you know, it was the greatest thing to receive as a debut author. Was this is somebody that has no association with me at all, who is so sort of interested in reading this book, you know, that she's come to me and asked whether she can get it over in Canada. And it was that's the sort of thing that makes it all worth it for me at the moment. It's I was really touched by that.
Yeah, Rose, you could probably relate to that. You're not too far removed from the debut phase. What were some of your thoughts when you started to encounter readers that you didn't know personally? Because I know you've had, you know, some real good responses from people that you have no idea who they are. Yeah, so
It was really incredible. And then, you know, I had a few that, you know, really surprised me, and I had one gentleman from Wales that pre-ordered, downloaded, and then he ordered a hard copy from Amazon, and then he even had me ship him an autographed copy, and he paid for my shipping. So.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah, my goodness,
that's super cool. And it
that's
was
what, that is fan
price.
That's what you call a fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that is a good story.
That really is. Yeah.
Go ahead, Benjamin. Sorry, I talked over you there.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, yeah, that's a real fan. It's a top fan badge from you, that rose, isn't it? That's
yes.
That's lovely too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he
yeah, that's a good feeling.
He left me a lovely review on Amazon and Goodreads.
Oh, fantastic.
And I think he's read it like 3 or 4 times now.
Gosh.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
awesome.
Not far,
well,
so
number 2 is not far off, Rose, so
yeah,
you'll have something new to send.
He asks me a lot.
That's nice.
You'll have to get
congratulations
him for novel number 2, Rose.
Yes, I'm really excited to graduate. I'm a real author now. I've got 2.
I'm a real author. Yeah, there is that feeling, yeah, when your first book comes out. I still remember it with me, too. It's like, yeah, when you finally hold that first book, you're like, oh, yeah, I am an author now. It's an interesting feeling.
I videotaped me, like, opening, you know, the very first author copy that you sent me. And I spent many, many times in denial after, like, did this really happen? Is this really here? And I just pick it up and touch it and hold it and smell it and flip the pages, and I sat and read it. And it was awesome.
It's so natural though, isn't it? Because you spend such, or you expend such a lot of yourself in creating these stories,
uh-huh,
don't you? And you spend such a lot of your time with them, and really to see the end result is just, it's incredibly sort of self-affirming. And I think, I can completely relate with that, Rose, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, then there's the other side of it, though, Benjamin, and I'd like to know your thoughts on this, but yeah, you have worked, you know, day and night with these characters, and you know, you've lived and breathed them. You've been, you know, put yourself into your work, because, I mean, all authors do. I mean, you pour yourself into your work, and then all of a sudden, your baby's out there, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's it's a little bit of trepidation there, because you know it's don't know how to, it's all going to go, and but your baby's out there, and it's got a life of its own at that point. And that's sometimes an interesting experience for a debut author too, to have it take voyage into the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very much, I guess, sort of parallel to being a parent, really, isn't it? You kind of, out it goes, mm-hmm, into the big bad world, and you know, how is it going to fare? Have you given it the right sort of the right necessary skills to be able to do well or not? And so, yeah, it is a scary time, but it's also very exciting.
I
think it's what you've wanted to do from the very start, isn't it? You've wanted it to be out there, and you've wanted other people to be picking it up and thinking about it and forming their own thoughts about it and telling you those thoughts. So, yeah, I'd say more than trepidation, I'd say probably excitement for me. I'm always trying to learn as well. So I'm hopeful that, you know, even the reviews that come back, which aren't perhaps quite so positive, you know, I'm going to look at them. I'm going to give them fair account. And hopefully for novel number 2 and 3 and onwards, you know, try and respond. So, yeah. It's a learning curve and very exciting. Yeah, not without trepidation though. Not without that.
No, yeah, I remember.
About.
Yeah, yeah, like you, I was very excited, but there were a little, a few other little feelings that kind of wove in as well. And it's a mix of emotions, but it's really and it's such a special time. A debut novel is a unique time in an author's career. It really is. And yeah, I think it's that moment where you really kind of, it's a big step. That's when you really feel like, yeah, okay, I'm on the road now. It's underway. Yeah. It's a very tangible sort of experience. And that's something that's definitely I encourage you to bask in it, enjoy it, celebrate it. I mean, it is definitely a special time. And what can we get as far as us over here in the States and elsewhere outside the UK right now? I guess the release date is January the 28th. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Now, you said it sold out on pre-order, but I'm assuming that there'll be some version of it that will be available from that point onward. What's the scoop on the editions and what will be made available on the 28th, and where I'm guessing they'll be just available through, you know, mainstream channels, Amazon, other places like that.
Yeah, so it's just... So, I mean, yeah, it's the first print run that sold out. So, mm-hmm. you know, there will be more print runs. So it's all right. You know, there are more books, and you can still pre-order it at the moment from most, you know, all the usual places. It's
okay.
What I keep saying to people who are trying to get a hard copy, a paperback in the States or internationally, is that there are several very good online book vendors at the moment. You've probably heard of them too. Book Depository is one of them, mm-hmm. and they do free worldwide delivery. So there's, you know, mm-hmm. that's a very good site to go with. And there's another one called Wordery as well. So mm-hmm. you're able to order the book either directly from the publisher or from any other or from one of those sites and have it shipped over. In terms of ebooks, you can it's available at Barnes & Noble, so you can get it from there as an ebook, and
great.
It's also available on Apple as well, so you can get it as an iBook from Apple, and it will be, of course, available from Amazon in probably about a week's time. I think we're just finalizing things at the moment, and then it will be up on Amazon as well. So yeah, there's plenty of ways to get hold of it at the moment, and yeah, whether it's paperback or ebook, you know, there are various avenues. And if anybody is struggling, then pop me an email. Let me know, and I can direct you to the best place.
Yeah, because I want to make sure that, yeah, folks are looking for this everywhere. Because, yeah, this is definitely one. I know I'm going to pick this up when as soon as I can get a copy. And yeah, you're right. Book Depository is great for international shipping, because let me tell you, from here to get shipping with places like, you know, UK is not as bad as like Australia and some places like that, because it costs a small fortune shipping
with
Australia
yeah.
and some places like that. But but yeah, UK is not too bad. But yeah, that is massive when you can get free international shipping. That's a godsend, in my opinion. But yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, folks, so check that out. And certainly that is awesome, though. I mean, I still, though, congratulations on the first print run selling out. I mean, that's not something every debut author accomplishes. That is fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, you're definitely getting off on the right foot here. You got your first award, you sold out your first print run edition. I'd say you're off to a pretty good start, and tomorrow, tonight for you, yes, you should definitely indulge a bit in your New Year's celebration, because you're doing all right. You're off to a
yes,
good start.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Rose. Yeah, I may have a couple of cans of something interesting.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see how the year see pumps out. But
well, I will raise a glass of bourbon to you. I will, and I promise I won't forget. I'll have to rate, because I definitely salute a fellow author who is off to such a cool start, and definitely you're going to be one of my first personal fiction reads out of the gates in 2021. So I have an ulterior motive for celebrating you, because you're going to entertain me early in the year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, I look forward to it too, Steve. I just hope you enjoy it now after what's been a fantastic build-up and discussion.
Yeah.
Now I've got to put my money where my mouth is now, haven't I? So, yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I love history. I love archaeology. I love settings, and definitely you've got it in a very interesting setting. I love horror. I also have an interest in military elements, and certainly with submarines and Spetsnaz and Russians and things like that. You've got that too. So, I mean, I have, like I said, I have no doubts. And then the fact that you're coming from, the country that has spawned some of the greatest writers the world has ever known. So, I mean, I'm not too worried. I think we're in pretty good hands here. So this is great. And then the fact that your publisher has a tuxedo cat and the logo, so that just kind of seals it.
That's the bait that you said. Yeah, that's definitely
right.
The main thing.
Yeah, that's it. But we're coming up on about 16 minutes left in the show. You've almost gotten there. Yes, you've almost made it. But Rose, what do you think we should cover that we haven't covered yet? Is there anything we have not covered? And or Benjamin, you can suggest as well, because we got a little time left here.
Promotion. Sorry.
No, please carry on, Rose.
What are some of your favorite things that you're prepping for, and what have you done for promotions before, when you announced when the book was coming out, before the pre-orders were available? What kind of promotions did you do?
Well, I've been doing an awful lot of stuff on social media, as we touched on earlier, Rose, on Facebook, and I've been doing an awful lot on Twitter as well. And I have to say, it's been a really, really edifying experience to build up such a brilliant bunch of friends, basically, on Twitter. I never expected it, but the support that I've had from that community has just been through the roof. And also, beyond what it is that I've written, I've encountered some other fantastic authors who are in the same sort of position as me. They're moving towards getting their first debut out. There's one lady in particular, Catherine McCarthy, who has just had a publishing deal agreed for her first novella. And there's a lot of other people as well who I've come across, and I've really, really enjoyed their work. So it's been a great experience in that sense. I've also I've got a Goodreads giveaway on the go at the moment. So there's 10 signed copies up for grabs of Colony. And I think there's been an overwhelming response to that as well so far. There's about over 1,700 people applied for or have entered the competition. And there's about 18 days left to go. So, it's bowled me over the response. But if anybody else is interested in entering, then you've got until the 18th of January. If you do, then best of luck.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, it's good for you to mention the online social media community, especially Twitter community, great writing community on there. I also second your comments on that community. I have a good time interacting with them as well. And we've even got some good folks from there listening in tonight, as a matter of fact. And the Goodreads contest. They changed up a little bit in the past year or two, but it's good to hear that you've got that many participants. That's great, because that's a couple thousand folks that have definitely gotten exposure to your book so far. That's awesome. And
I think just as a fact in its own right, it's just, we were talking earlier about the things that really sort of affect you as an author when you put your book out there. That's one of the ones for me that's really sort of, it's brought a smile to my face, because it's, that many people have at least heard of your novel, which is pretty mind blowing again for somebody that's at debut stage. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of tools to use for the author, and actually there's too many for an author to even have time to use these days. I mean, you have to pick your spots and decide on what platforms you're going to spend time on, and the things you're going to do, like the Goodreads contest, because you could get spread thin in a hurry with all that's available out there.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, very
blow
much.
Blow
so.
A
you
lot of time
that...
and go down a lot of rabbit holes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
but,
you throw in NetGalley and
like...
BookBub and all those
yep.
sorts of things, and yeah, it's you, as you say, you do get spread very thin, don't you? But it's I guess that's part of the challenge and part of the fun and the excitement as well.
It is, but I have to say, I'm a little envious of, like, Tolkien and Lewis and all, because they never had to worry about maintaining a Twitter account. I've always thought,
I've always laughed
thinking about what Tolkien would do if he had to contend with social media. I got a feeling that he probably would not have liked it much.
I have to assume he probably wouldn't have got on with it as well as, as well as other people.
Right, But I do think of that at times, and it does give me a chuckle about how today's author, you know, we're kind of in that position where we have to wear multiple hats and kind of be part-time publicity, part-time marketing, part-time this, part-time that, you know, as well as, you know, being a writer. And it's not the easiest thing in the world. Yeah, especially, like I said, you know, you're coming out of the gate for the first time. It's like, you know, where do I spend my time? You know, what do I do? Where do I go? And I think that's definitely what, you know, Rose, I think, was asking, you know, it's like what you focused on, because we like to hear that from folks. This is where they're putting their time on, because you can get spread way too thin and get you know, pulled off writing, even, you know, by getting too immersed in that side of it. Yeah, definitely
a
tough challenge.
Yeah,
yeah,
and, I mean,
sure.
As you say, there's very much that need these days, isn't there, for as an author to sort of be very active with marketing your book and yourself. And it's one of those ironic situations, isn't it, where you don't go into writing to go into marketing. So you kind of you write your book, and then suddenly you know you're there. You are you have to get on and do an awful lot of marketing as well. So it's not something you're necessarily used to or potentially even very good at. So yeah, it's one of the other challenges, really, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And most writers are introverts by nature, so they're asked to go into activities that force them to be more extroverted. So it's even there's even a hurdle there for a lot of authors. We know that well, and it's tough. It's not the easy thing. Yeah, for sure. But what social media would you direct folks to connect with you most on? Because that's something I want to get into the show as well, so people can find you online. I know that you've on your press release, you focus on a website, Facebook, and Twitter, and feel free to discuss those and give those connections out, because I want folks to find you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Stephen. Well, yeah, the main one then would be the official website, which is www.benjamin-cross.com. And I mean, probably the simplest way to say it is that if you go onto the website, there is a contacts page, and that has a list of where you can reach out to me. So there's Twitter, there's Facebook, Goodreads, Instagram, all the usual places. And, you know, I love to chat to people on all of those different fora. So, you know, if you send me a message, you'll get a response. I'd be more than happy to connect and, you know, answer any questions and discuss books. You know, I'm a reader as well as a writer, as you guys are. I love literature. I love books, and I love people that love books. So yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. And I'm definitely going to, I do need to follow you on Twitter, and because I've got your Twitter address here, and I'll definitely be connecting with you there. But definitely look him up, www.benjamin-cross.com, and that'll have segues to all the other social media. So yeah, definitely check it out and get on board. Yeah, because as we cross into 2021 with Benjamin. So you see what I did
good.
There? But,
us all
yeah. Yeah, you're getting my warped sense of humor already. That's encouraging. So,
you're digging, Stephen. You're digging.
I know. Well, you've had to put up with me for a lot longer than Benjamin. He's getting subjected to this on the fly here.
I had a throw in the pun.
Yeah,
no,
I can't help myself at times.
it's not too distant from my own sense of humour, to be honest, Stephen. So, yeah, no, please. Yeah, I've really enjoyed meeting you all, and I've had a fantastic time. It'll be great to connect with you online as well, on Twitter and on Facebook.
Yeah.
And, keep in touch.
Well, I regret to disappoint you even further by saying that, I definitely look forward to spotlighting you when I get my video activity going here early in the year with some new emphasis on my personal and our press's YouTube channels and whatnot. And I know that's probably heartbreaking to hear after listening to my bad pun there, but it's
I'm just gonna hang up now, Stephen. If that's I'd absolutely love to.
Because I already want to follow up once I've read it, and then do a kind of like a follow up visit with you for sure, and definitely we'll have
that
you back on this show as well. And like to expose people to emerging creatives, and definitely you're taking off, and I'm glad we were able to fit you in we did a Christmas Eve special, but here we are on the New Year's Eve special, as we call it. So that's two of our most unique specials of the year, and you made one of them, so that's cool.
Brilliant. I'm honored. It's been great. It really has. Thanks for all of your support, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the book. I really would. Yours, Rose, too. It would mean, what you'd have to say, your comments would mean a lot. So, yeah, please do let me know.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, because I'm as you might say over there, I'm chuffed to bits to read a novel with this many elements. Yeah. It's definitely something I am appeals to so many different interests of mine. I mean, I can't help myself but want to put this on top, kind of bump it to the top of my TBR list going forward. But so is there anything that we didn't cover tonight about your release and everything about you that we should have, or you would wanted to cover? We got about a little over 4 minutes left here.
No, I don't think so, really. I think we've covered pretty much everything there is to cover. It's I guess I'd just reiterate that you can still get in on the Goodreads giveaway if you're interested to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do go to the website, and there'll be a little prompt which will allow you to enter with one click. If anybody goes to the website and wants to subscribe, then you'll get regular newsletters, and you'll get sort of different bits of information as well, so perhaps some extra chapters and things of that nature. So there's that option as well.
So email lists, those are just great, because those get seen and they get delivered to your inbox, and you don't have to worry about algorithms and how many people on your following you actually see your post, which is always a joy when doing Facebook and Twitter. That's something, highly recommend. And I'm just curious, in your newsletter, do you also bring in some of your adventures as an archaeologist? Do you comment a little bit about that side of your world, or do you keep those separate, or do you bring that into the newsletter? I'm just personally curious.
Absolutely. It's not so much in the newsletter, but there's a blog as well. I keep a blog on there, and I'm going to try and sort of make it a half blog, half vlog, and start doing a few more video messages on there as well. But I do talk a lot about archaeology on the blog. So, that's somewhere that you can see what I've been up to. And I've even put up a couple of blogs about the feature that I was talking about earlier that I'd been digging in the back garden. So, there's stuff on there that you'll find interesting, I reckon, Stephen.
Oh, yes, I will. And my better half, Holly, who you did not get to meet yet, but you will. She's a force of nature, as Rose can back me up on. But her passion,
yes.
I mean, she lives for the Victorian age. And tonight when I tell her that you dug up stuff from possibly the Victorian age in your backyard, she's going to go crazy.
it's definitely from the Victorian age, and there's a lot of it as well.
Uh-oh.
And there's plenty of photographs and stuff up on the blog. So, yes, she'll enjoy that. And I'll be happy to talk to her about it as well.
Rose, you know what's going to happen. Holly's going to – you know Holly.
Yeah.
Am I starting to
– her new best friend.
Yeah, you'll have a new best friend after this when she realizes, yeah, you got Victorian age stuff. Oh, man, that's too funny. But, yeah, can't wait to tell her about tonight's interview because, yeah, she also has a passion for this. And one of our good friends, Sarah Marion, who I'll just drop that name because I do hope to connect you with her as well, but she's an archaeologist here in Kentucky who also is an author who also is one of the principals in a really good press called Per Bostet that's based out of the Louisville, Kentucky area. And so she's I know she's going to love hearing about you just from all the kind of stuff we've just covered. So, yeah, we're looking forward to a good friendship with you, my friend. I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're going to have some fun, Stephen, I reckon. And Rose, yeah, it's been wonderful to meet you. It really has. And thank you for all your support.
Definitely.
And I look forward to staying in touch.
You bet. Cheers. And and so I will go ahead and I'll sign off on my end, and then I'll turn it over to you, Benjamin, and you can give your last statement or outro, and then Rose, take us out on the show. But this is Stephen Zimmer, and thank you for joining us for our New Year's Eve special, and we will see you as always next Wednesday for another live Star Chamber show podcast at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. So have a happy, happy new year. Let's get 2021 off on the right foot. Pick up a copy of Colony, and you'll be guaranteed of that. So over to you, Benjamin.
Thanks, Stephen. So, yeah, just a big thank you to everybody that's tuned in and everybody that's been listening. It's been great. All of your support so far has been fantastic. So have a great New Year's, and, feel free to reach out and keep in touch.
Thank you so much for being on, Benjamin. So nice to meet you. Thank you, Stephen, for having the show. And I really look forward to more things to come in 2021. Happy New Year's Eve. Signing off.